This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
So, one of life's greatest pleasures comes in the form of the New York Times crossword puzzle. It is widely considered to be the gold standard. It has been edited since 1993 by Will Shortz, and it is something that I've been trying to do every morning for the last 10 years or so. There are two types of people who do the crossword. The first being what you call a casual solver of sorts, someone who tries it out every once in a while, filling up what they can before simply letting it go. And then there are the obsessives like me, who insist on doing it in pen, who put the rest of the world on hold until every last square is filled. Now, last year there was a massive scandal that plagued the crossword world. It came to light that Timothy Parco, editor of one of America's most widely syndicated crosswords, had edited more than 60 individual puzzles that copy elements from the New York Times, often with pseudonyms for bylines.
So you've spoken to a lot of people while researching the story. I've got to know, what's the reaction been in the crossword community? Because if they're anything like me, we're pretty obsessive about our crosswords.
The reaction, I think, is aggrieved. I think it's annoyed. It's, you know, angry. It's sad.
That was Oliver Rader. He wrote a great analysis of the scandal on the website 538.com.
Hi, my name is Oliver Rader, and I am a senior writer at 538.com. I think there are two sort of things that really bother the constructors and editors about this case, and this sort of, you know, misciting and not crediting the original authors. I think that's a big thing. But I think the second thing is, the currency of crossword construction is creativity. There, you know, you're sort of working in this really constrained form, right? It's a 15 by 15 series of white and black boxes in which you put letters, right? But within this form, the good constructors and good editors manage to do really, really interesting things. And that's what distinguishes a good constructor is, wow, like, I didn't know this is something that could be done in a crossword puzzle, and they manage to do it pretty much every single day. You'll see something that you haven't quite seen before. And for an editor of, you know, one of the US's most widely circulated newspapers to basically be casting creativity aside by, you know, rerunning old puzzles, I think that's really anathema to the people who take pride in their work in this world. And you know, not only, you know, are the puzzles not creative in their minds, but they're, you know, far, like, beyond that, they're exactly the puzzles that he's run before. So I think that's just a sort of not what's valued in the world, and I think that annoys people. I think they see this as, there's an opportunity cost, right? There's a major puzzle that millions of people probably solve every week or every month that's really kind of running counter to what they value.
And of course, I guess there's that added annoyance if you're not a Times fan, that you find out so many of these crosswords have been ripped off from the Times as well.
That's right. And, you know, another person I talked to in this story is probably the most famous person, at least in the US, in the world of crossword puzzles, which is Will Shortz, who edits the New York Times puzzle. And I spoke to him, and he sounded, you know, very upset, and he didn't really mince words. He said, you know, he's never heard of anything like this happening before. And, you know, he told me it's unethical to him. It's a clear cut case of plagiarism. And he said, you know, should he discover anyone of his constructors ever doing this, he would never publish their work again. So really, like, unequivocal response from the bigger names in crosswords that I spoke to.
You're listening to The Evening Edition with me, Uma Paganampake Pagan, and I'm speaking today to Oliver Rader about crosswords. Timothy Parker has since been dishonorably discharged from all his crossword editing duties, but the scandal made me wonder about how prominent plagiarism was in the crossword world. How often do these things happen?
When was the last great scandal in the crossword world? Was there one?
Occasionally, you'll get, you know, folks who are upset with a word that the Times puzzle, that the Times includes in their puzzle. I think, I don't know when this was, but a few months back, they included the word scumbag, and there was a sort of minor outcry. And you know, New York Times puzzles are meant to pass this sort of Sunday morning breakfast table test, right? And it's sort of meant to be fun for the whole family. And when things like scumbag crop up, people get upset.
Because, of course, I'm assuming scumbag in the 21st century has taken on a less offensive meaning.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't bat an eyelash, but I'm not the... I might have slightly coarser sensibilities than some solvers.
Has crossword theft been uncovered before? I mean, it must have been ridiculously hard to do so.
Yeah, there have been a few isolated cases, not necessarily of purposeful plagiarism, but of puzzles that were pretty similar to ones that came before. So I talked with another professional constructor, a man called Matt Gaffney, and he himself actually almost exactly replicated a theme from a previous puzzle, and he actually wrote about it for the online magazine Slate, just how, you know, kind of play-by-play, a blow-by-blow of how this happened and how this might happen. And I think it happened to be a sort of Halloween-themed puzzle, and he talked about how he kind of replicated this earlier theme. But even in that case, this case that was so rare and so remarkable as to warrant, you know, an article being written about it, even in that case, the theme answers weren't quite the same. The grid was different. And I think, you know, one of the reasons that the data is sort of necessary to uncover something like this is, in a lot of cases, these repetitions will occur years later. And, you know, if you're someone who does a lot, even if you do a lot of puzzles, you know, you're probably not going to remember a theme or a puzzle necessarily from 5 or even 10 years ago. But once you kind of get them all in one place and you get them on the web, and you can, you know, just ask the code to kind of run through and find replications, that's when it becomes obvious. But yeah, just in the course of sort of day-to-day solving, in some ways it's, you know, it's kind of a perfect crime, because, you know, you're never going to notice if you're just a casual solver. But once, you know, now we have this sort of technological era of big data, and that these sort of replications aren't going to go unnoticed anymore.
Because it's something quite, well, it's twofold, isn't it? I mean, the theme is one thing, and then for anyone who's actually done a crossword puzzle, it's often the clues themselves are as hard to come up with as the theme.
That's right.
And yeah. So, and when both of those things kind of match up, it's a bit of a dead giveaway.
Yeah, I think that's right. So I talked to the editor in question, Timothy Parker, for a very long time, about an hour and a half, a day or two before we published our story. And, you know, he doesn't deny that themes have been perfectly replicated in his puzzles. And he, in fact, didn't really seem to care that much. But he chalked it up to this sort of statistical inevitability of, you know, you edit so many puzzles, you write so many puzzles over the course of a career, eventually you're going to replicate a theme, but that, you know, doesn't hold a lot of statistical water, because you see, you know, the flow of all these themes is going from other outlets to his outlets, and basically never the other way around. So even if you would expect themes to be replicated, I think there's about 65 New York Times themes that were replicated and then published in USA Today or Universal. I mean, to see that, that'd be like, you know, flipping a coin and getting heads 65 times in a row, right? So you're getting pretty quickly into one in a billion territory. So I think the sort of, oh, this is just chance argument doesn't really hold up. One constructor who I talked to in my piece actually wrote his own piece again at Slate, Matt Gaffney, sort of adding a kind of qualitative analysis to my quantitative findings. And he goes through puzzle by puzzle, explaining from the point of view of a professional constructor just how unlikely something like this is. But you're exactly right. I mean, a theme is kind of a puzzle's identity, right? And to replicate a theme is sort of like crossword puzzle identity theft, if you will. But yeah, it's a big deal. The theme is kind of the toughest thing to come up with, and then the clues are sort of what makes a puzzle tough or what makes a puzzle funny or enjoyable. So these are, you know, just subsets of the puzzle, but very important ones.
Yeah, I read Matt's piece on Slate.com, and it's interesting because I suppose after, if you're editing that many puzzles, 15, 20,000 puzzles, it's one thing to plagiarize yourself because you may not remember the clues you wrote 10 years ago, but it's another thing to have it almost. I mean, I think one of Matt's examples was what's level 8 on the crossword puzzle plagiarism scale. And that was pretty, I mean, if I ever saw damning evidence, that was probably it.
Yeah, I think Matt's piece, I mean, I was fairly convinced after in researching mine that, you know, something funny is going on. And I think reading Matt's, you know, he starts out giving, I think, Parker a lot of the benefit of the doubt, which I think is very fair. But once you get through, I don't remember exactly how many examples he had, but, you know, 6 or 8, something like that. And by the time you're done, I mean, all benefit of the doubt has just been, you know, completely eviscerated. And I learned a lot reading Matt's piece. I don't construct puzzles myself. I solve them fairly avidly, but I learned a lot from Matt's story and just kind of going through the real nitty gritty of, you know, this is not happenstance, basically.
So I have to ask, and I don't know if you've got an answer to this one, but you guys at 538 are the numbers people, but did you guys crunch the numbers as to whether more crosswords do actually mean more repeats?
Yeah, I don't have a great answer to that. I think, you know, there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of puzzles probably have ever been published. There's 52,000 in this database. And I think in some sense, you're bound to see repetition, right? And there's certain, you know, small words in the fill. I think the most common word in the New York Times puzzle is era, ERA, and you've seen that hundreds of times.
Yeah.
But you never see these sort of large scale, you know, long theme answers, themes being perfectly replicated. You know, the Times has been publishing a puzzle since I think 1942, and you don't see Times puzzles wholesale replicating previous Times puzzles, right? So I think on the margin, more puzzles means more repetition, but I don't think that more puzzles means that we're going to see this sort of exact duplicates like we have been seeing in USA Today and Universal, unless something else kind of funny is going on. As a terrible answer to your question, but
that's all right. But in your piece, you make this distinction between the kind of plagiarism that's taken place, and you call it shady versus shoddy puzzles. So what's shady and what's shoddy?
Right. So shady is when Universal and USA Today, the copyright to both of these puzzles is held by something called Universal UClick, which is a big syndicate here in the States. And I call shady those cases where Universal has taken themes from other completely unrelated outlets. So most of the time, this happens to be the New York Times, which is widely considered the gold standard of puzzles in the U.S. And these are the cases I call them shady, because this could potentially be actionable copyright infringement. And I spoke to a couple of intellectual property lawyers when I was reporting the story, and they said, you know, this is sort of a gray area, sort of untested gray area. There's no question that crossword puzzles are copyrightable, but there is a question sort of where the line is. You know, is the line at the words in the grid? Do you have to also replicate the clues? Is just taking the long theme answers enough? And so that is sort of the shady is, you know, basically taking things from other unrelated outlets. And this happens, I think, about 100 times by my count in the database over the last maybe 10 or 12 years. So this isn't something that's happening every single day, but enough where, you know, it's pretty clearly not by random chance. So that's what I chose to call shady. And then the other category, which I chose to call shoddy, is when these Universal and USA Today outlets are basically replicating their own puzzles from, say, 5, 6, 7 years prior. And in these cases, it is basically the whole puzzle being replicated, oftentimes with very minor cosmetic sort of changes. And if you find our piece on 538, you can see a sort of graphic example where there's just a handful of letters that have been changed, but otherwise the puzzle is exactly the same. And this practice is shoddy, like I say, but it's almost certainly legal, right? Because they own the copyright to the puzzles. They can kind of do whatever they want with the puzzle. But it's shoddy in the sense that I don't think that it's good service to the readers of these newspapers. I don't think it's good service to the solvers. And there's something else kind of weird going on where you'll see a puzzle that's replicated. The puzzle will be almost exactly the same, but the byline, the listed author of the puzzle, will be changed. And this, the name of this listed author is basically a fake name. It's a pseudonym. And, you know, it's an open question, kind of why Timothy Parker did this, why these pseudonyms are being used on the replicated puzzles. Almost certainly legal, but certainly not best practice in the world of crossword puzzle editing, such as it is.
I was reading your bit where you talk to your legal experts, and what was fascinating for me was, of course, even though Universal does own the copyright, they still have to credit the appropriate author, don't they?
So I think also a bit of an open question, at least for me. I'm sure there are IP lawyers out there who would have a better answer than I do. But whether or not that's legal or illegal, I can say that it really bothers the constructors. I think there's a couple things that really bothers the sort of professionals in this world, which, believe it or not, there are professionals in this world. And they feel slighted. So Ben, the example I gave when we started talking, you know, he's pissed off. He's angry. His puzzle is running under the name Bruce Manders, right? This is a puzzle Ben Taussig created, which is listed in hundreds of newspapers across the country as being written by Bruce Manders. And Bruce Manders is not a real person. It's a pseudonym invented by Timothy Parker or someone working for Timothy Parker. And, you know, yeah, whether or not it's illegal, I don't know. But I can say that it really riles the original authors of these crosswords.
I've been speaking today to Oliver Rader. You should check out his writings on the great website 538.com. They are pretty cool numbers people over there. As always, you can find more great shows from us on our BFM 89.9 app, which is available on Apple's App Store and on Google Play. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.